At the Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, and a couple of things that as we look to bring in Dick, down 88 down in Binghamton, they've got close to 4 feet, so I don't feel so bad. And holy cow, 40 inches in Binghamton, it really is tailing off now, and we'll check in with Dick and see what he got outside of Charlton there, between Charlton and Ballston Spa on the road to Amsterdam. I want to mention something that I actually got up to speed a little bit with yesterday, and Michigan, and I had seen the headline, and I really had not seen much more detail about the attempt to get racing back going in Michigan. And apparently it's in the legislature, and they very well, I don't know if last night, I'm just reached out to see if there was any action from last night's session, or if it's going to be tonight's session, today's session in Michigan. But apparently, I mean, they were very close before the COVID issues arose. It seemed like everything was in place to get that project done. And so be aware of that. And I can also mention there's really three venues that I don't know how much we'll do between now and tomorrow when we wrap up. But in Kentucky, Governor Beshear was kind of banging the drum and rousing Frankfurt in terms of sports betting and the HHR, you know, because that's going to have to be addressed. But I sense that they're, you know, they're confident and hopeful that whatever is going to need to get done gets done. So keep an eye on that. And there's still more going on in Arizona that we'll have to revisit after the first of the year as well. So Arizona, Kentucky, and Michigan on those fronts. And I think I hear Dick in the background.
Yes, I am.
How badly did you guys get? Good morning. How many, what did you get for weather, for snow?
Well, what makes it worse is the forecast yesterday was the farther north you were, the less you would get. So the map showed, you know, Saratoga County, 6 to 10 inches. Now, over 2 weeks ago, I, being the good citizen, decided to have my snowblower serviced, you know, just in case, get ready for winter. So the guy came and picked it up over 2 weeks ago, and he still has my snowblower.
Oh, jeez. Wow.
So I am up the creek without a paddle. We have close to 3 feet. It's mind-boggling how much snow is out there. I took some pictures and can barely see my car. I have an Ford F-350 truck that it happens to be white, so you can barely see the truck. It's just like a big block of white. We just had the dog out. You know, I have a 100-pound Akita who loves the snow, but she's like, you're kidding, right? And I can't do anything. I mean, without the snowblower, normally I would go out and do little by little, and as I heard you talking with Tina and the snowblower, yeah, the snow's higher than the snowblower, so you kind of have to go real slow and let it topple down and stuff like that. But it's perfect snow for snowblowing because it's nice and light, all that. Well, we're plowed in. We're 165-foot driveway from the road to the house uphill. My wife would kill me if I pick up a shovel and try to do it manually. So we're in the process of trying to get a hold of God knows who, because we don't use the plow. We always have the snowblower. I gave this guy over 2 week lead time. I called him on Tuesday. He's like, "Oh yeah, I'm really up against it."
No kidding.
Yeah, me too.
Well, what do you have? You got somebody that can come with the plow?
Eventually, but now we can probably get out. I mean, Karen has a Jeep Grand Cherokee, and the Ford, the truck can get out. You know, so if we had to get out, yes, we could get out. But the problem, as everyone knows, is it's not the driveway. It's the end of the driveway where the street plow comes, and that gets piled up. Now, luckily, it's still light. It's not a wet snow that's going to pile up and then freeze. That's really bad. So I'm not expecting a snowblower in the foreseeable future. And hopefully we can get a hold of someone to come plow, or at least maybe someone drive by and feel sorry for us.
That's nuts. I went out and I tuned up the snowblower for Tina yesterday. I went out with my kit, and no, I plugged it in and primed it and started it. I didn't do anything. I just and it fired at first asking. So I said, oh, good, okay. And so then I made a whole big thing of it with Tina. I said, honey, I sent her a little video of it running. I said, you're all set. I got it all. I wiped it down. It looks great. It's all tuned up, gassed up, and oil, and it actually still had gas from last winter, so I didn't have to do anything. But don't tell her this, though, folks, by the way. The stuff I tell you guys, somehow it all gets back to her, whatever I say. She'll come home from school some days and say, what did you talk about today? I said, oh, you know, we talked about aqueduct. No, you didn't. she said, you can't put anything. There's no point in trying to lie or hide anything, Dick. I've learned that fairly early. She's a teacher. Marrying a teacher was another mistake on that front. Not a mistake. That's not what I meant. It's not what it infers. You know, if she can, you know, she's got a whole career, reading through lying children. So lying husbands, forget it. Don't even try, guys. Give it up. Oh, it's good. I'm in for between now and Sunday. It's going to be a holiday weekend of her abusing me after, you know, not helping with the snow and this line of conversation.
And then I heard you say you thought it was lightening up. This is getting worse.
Oh, is that right?
Just like you were describing where you are, where I am, I cannot explain what it's like when you get outside of Boston Spa. And that stretch between that and Amsterdam.
Right.
I don't know if it's plateau. I can't explain it, but it's like the temperature here in the wintertime will be 8 degrees colder than Saratoga, 10 to 12 colder than Albany. I've driven people to the airport. I'm like, the temperature now, when we get down there. And then, you know, if they're calling for 6 inches, usually we get a lot more. But this storm, we were on the edge of not getting a whole lot. So I'm thinking, well, if it's 6 to 12 without the snowblower, no big deal. Well, it's 30 to 35 or whatever it is. It's not a big deal.
I had the same experience. I mean, as early as yesterday morning, you know, Tina said, what's the latest? I said, what do you mean the latest? So how much snow are we going to get? I said, I don't know. Nothing. I'm not even thinking about it. She said, no, we're supposed to get a little snow. So I looked it up, and it says, 12 to 16. I said, okay, all right, so it's going to snow. And then this morning, I was just astounded. I put up a video, and I don't even think the video does it justice of how it was coming down snow the way thunderstorm rain comes down. That's how hard it was. It was crazy. They said, I guess in Binghamton, they said it was, they were getting 4 to 6 inches an hour, which is unheard of. That's crazy accumulation. Crazy. Yeah. Well, luckily, they're going to be running races. They're going to be running races, let's see, in Florida today and in Louisiana and elsewhere, out in Cypress, California. We went over the Los Al Pick 6 with Brad Free. And I think, you know, Dick, that's going to be the biggest wrinkle. And I'm going to put together, after I get off the show, I'll put together my play. But I got to say, I think the $2, going back to a $2 increment, is going to be the trickiest wrinkle in attacking this pick six, because we've lost it. I mean, we're basically playing 50-cent pick fives these days, and you know, it's just not the same exercise when you do old school, you know, $2 pick sixes.
Yeah, and I agree with Brad and his take on the $2 pick six and how it's been destroyed with the increments and everything else. And yes, it makes you make decisions. It makes you be a better handicap. It makes you manage money better. And you know, what's ironic was, we got to go to the smaller increments to help the little guys. Well, now they have 20-cent pick sixes, and all you hear about is, oh, the whales are scooping up all the pods. It's hurting the little guy. Well, the little guy had a real good shot with the $2 pick six.
Yep.
And it worked very well. And now I will not deny it was losing popularity. When you started, you'd get a one-day carryover at Naira, 50,000, then it's down to 40, then it's down to 20. It's like, you know, yeah, the pick five, the pick six was dropping because you're adding pick fives and pick fours and all these other competitive bets to it. But as far as just that bet, because I used to say, just leave that one alone. Do what you want with all the other bets. Just leave that one alone, please. I remember Aaron Veracruz from California. He was the same thing. He's like, we do this right. It's huge in California. And, I salute LaSalle, and I got nothing else better to do today, so I'll take a look at it.
Yeah, nice. You bring up a good question when you talk about the syndicates and the groups attacking the 20-cent increment rollover, you know, jackpot bets. Historically, Dick, how much involvement did the groups have in $2 pick six historically?
Not much.
Not much.
No.
Yeah, that's what I would think.
Well, now we have to distinguish. There are big bettors that aren't computer bettors, so they decide to do something. They may decide not to do something. It wasn't part of a program. With the program bettors, yes, it's become part of their strategies and everything.
Is that's Dick, right? Scrambled. At first, I wondered if it was my. The return coming back to me, but that's Dick, huh? Yeah. All right. I'll pick him up and yeah, that's what I figured. All right. There you go. Dick, we lost you there. You went, it was electronic interference. And I guess there still is. All right. Let me know, Case. Oh, you lost him. All right. So that was, I wonder. You know, somebody just wrote something. They said, you know, hope the power and the heat, etc., that stay on. We did lose power, I guess, in the middle of the night, from like midnight till 12:45. That I could tell when we got up. But the it's a light. It's not like a wet, heavy snow that brings tree limbs down. So from that standpoint, I hope we're, you know, should be okay. It's funny because Tina, this morning, Tina and I were sitting, and having coffee. And you know, we knew that there was no way she was going to school, and we she talked about a storm when she was a girl in the 70s. She thought mid to late 70s, where she said that they got, you know, 4 or 5 feet of snow, and I don't remember, and I was, you know, at that time I would have been in Connecticut still. What I remember is the ice storm that it must have been in the early 70s, between, I'd say, 71 and 73, 72. We had an ice storm in New England, and there was no power for a week in outside of Hartford. And we spent the first night in the house by the fire in the basement. And that's problematic because the fire draws all the air, you know, right up the chimney. So it got too cold to stay in the house, and we ended up we went up to West Springfield, and that last exit in West Springfield, Mass, before the Mass Pike entrance, and we stayed there like 6 nights. And my dad and I would come down. We would drive down to the house every day. My brother was little, and he stayed with my mother at the hotel. And my dad and I went back to the house every day. My dad had an oxyacetylene torch that he lit and walked around the house to warm the house up, and especially the bathrooms, so that the commodes wouldn't crack. And we did that for days, and then finally finally the power came back. But there was no power for at least 6 days. And I've told you about the one in Montreal in the 90s, which was in Quebec, was unbelievable. I mean, that one, you know, there were people that didn't have power for 6 weeks. Crazy on the south of the St. Lawrence and in the city in Montreal. I mean, I lived right downtown Montreal off St. Catherine and St. Mathieu, and by the Faubourg. And we didn't have power for 3 days. That was the one where you saw those high tension wires that, you know, those towers, like they snapped like Tinker Toys. It was crazy, crazy. Dick, back with us.
I am back. You know, I think next time we do this, we should try a Skype call.
Okay, sure.
You know,
we can do that with you.
That might be more reliable.
Case,
use Skype a lot.
Yeah, that we could do. I think we could do that. We there was a period where Case and I had to when we had to replace the ISDN line had gone down, and I had to wait for. Verizon to patch in a new water had gotten in and cracked it. And it took like, I don't know, 3 weeks. And right, Case? We did, remember that? And I did it through this wacky, I had to patch it in through my computer. And we did the show that way. It was like, I felt like Marconi. It was just, Watson, come quick. I need you. I'm completely, I blew the turn here. I don't know where did we leave off with you?
probably snow. No, actually, I was going to relay a story. There was a famous jackpot bet, not today's jackpots, but it was one of these things that for $500,000, you could buy every combination. And a guy I know of, who's pretty prominent in racing betting, flew into the track. I don't know if it was a dog track or not. And he bought the pool, and it worked. He basically doubled his money, but it was pretty much guaranteed. But the guarantee is, as long as there's nobody else doing what he's doing. And not because of today's rules, just because you'd have two winners and you'd be dividing the pool. in half instead of having the whole pool to yourself. So it's always, there's always been people looking at opportunities. I mean, they call it markets, and they look at markets and they see this market is soft or playable, whatever it might be. So with the traditional $2 pick six, big bettors could combine and get partners and things like that. But you also had, most of mine were in California, $49,000 on a $144 ticket, $10,000 on a $96 ticket. I mean, I wasn't putting tons in. I think the most I ever put in was over $500. There was a crazy Delmar carryover, like $3 million guarantee. I know the pool got up over $10 million. The winner, I think, won $11 million, and it was a single winner. And that's the biggest score of all time. But that was the most I ever chased. And I'm pretty diligent. I only play when there's carryovers, and as Brad was talking about, the negative takeout or no takeout bet.
Right.
Because the carryover and as long as it's not your money is not in the carryover. If you've been chasing, you're not in that position. So I would pick my spots and things like that, and now even with these mandatory payouts, they don't get me really excited. I rarely play them.
Yeah, I'm curious, and we'll see. We'll see how this one turns out. And Brad made it feel like and he's somebody that actually helped me years ago when I used to get flummoxed by low-level claimers. And I remember bringing it up to him one day, and I'm sure we were doing a pick six because he's one of my favorite, reach out and converse. He's probably my favorite conversation when it comes to pick sixes. And I voiced that concern that I felt intimidated by the lowest levels. And I'm even going to remember what it was. It was a Hollywood sequence. And he said, don't let that be of concern. He said, he convinced me, he said, the low levels are reliable and consistent. And I had always had this, this mentality that it was the opposite, that they were, completely, unpredictable and difficult to read. And that... that kind of helped me adjust my approach, and I always remember that. He thinks that this is more approachable than I do. I thought that this was a little trickier than Brad did. So we'll see. We'll see if it gets hit today, and how quirky the ticket building is. One thing about the Twitter era is that we do get info bubbling to the surface pretty quick when it comes to that, so we'll see. Dick, meanwhile, a couple of things. Let's get thoughts toward this weekend, our last opportunity to talk. We got together on Monday for the international race, the HKIR recapping, and had more action yesterday, and look forward to the weekend. Give us last opportunity to talk about Hong Kong until January.
Yeah, we were back at Happy Valley yesterday. Things pretty much back to normal. Zach Purton suddenly has gotten hot. Now, he won the International Jockey Championship, so he won, I think it was 500,000 Hong Kong dollars for that. Kind of got him back on the path because he'd been pretty cold up until then. And then last Sunday, he had a couple of winners, did well. And then yesterday, four winners. And Joe got shut out on Sunday and yesterday. So he's kind of chipped away the margin. It was 20, and now it's down to 14. So Joe has 51 wins. Zach has 37. Ironically, Zach now has more money won. He has $66 million in Hong Kong dollars, which is probably 9 million U.S. Joe has 63 million. So Zach's gotten warmed up. And I read an interview with him where he was talking about just he obviously, you know, you don't have to remind him he was 20 behind Joe, but he was talking about how many bad barriers he drew and that he thought it would even out. And part of that was you could see it because he had like a boatload of second place finishes. So Zach's been riding well, and now he's winning. So yesterday, four wins on the card out of the eight races at Happy Valley, which historically he always does well there. Jockey News, Christophe Soumillon has a full book of mounts this Sunday at Chatin, and he will be there till February 14th. So he is licensed for 2 months. He had a couple of COVID issues that kept him out of the big races, and naturally one of them probably would have been a winning mount for him. But Soumillon will be riding each week at Happy Valley and Chatin for the next 2 months, so that's going to add a lot of excitement. This coming Sunday, we have Soumillon, but we have no Neil Callahan, no Chad Schofield, no Vincent Hull, no Derek Long. So they're all on the shelf. And so the jock room, which has about 20 licenses, but considering they run 14 races at Chatin, the guys are pretty busy. They're going to be real busy on Sunday with those four riders at a commission. So we get back, we're on a normal schedule this coming week. We're at Chatin Sunday night, midnight Eastern time, 9 o'clock Pacific time for the first race. 10 races, 8 of them on the turf, 2 of them, race 5 and 7, are on the all-weather, and we're back to Happy Valley next Wednesday. Then the schedule kind of gets a little different. They run back at Chatin Saturday, and then they come back at Chatin Friday, January 1st. So they'll be kind of bouncing around, but a couple of unusual cards at Chatin, not in the normal space. So, a couple of picks for Sunday morning. Race 3 is interesting because it's a Class 4, and we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 first-time starters in the race, which usually you get a couple, but not. And actually there's another one on the AE list. So, a bunch of debut horses, and luckily when you use the form guide, they have this one page with all the barrier trials. So you just have them just listed out as to how they've been doing in their barrier trials. And the one who seems to be doing well is number 12, Winner Method. Now, he's by Deep Field, which is a big sire over there. Trained by Danny Shum, ridden by Zach Purton, gets him at 125 pounds. And he won his way. He won the last two barrier trials. And he won the last one in 110.24 going gate to wire. So he's already gone 6 furlongs in pretty fast time, showed a lot of speed doing it. And Zach returns in the irons. this is a 1,000 meter, so the higher post position numbers are closer to the stand side, which seems an advantage. The horses seem to gravitate, at least the riders seem to gravitate to that side of the track. So he'll already be close to it. So I think Winner Method, and this is going to be one of those horses, Steve, watch the board, and you can start watching the board Saturday.
Jesus, no good. Hey. Yeah. No, we lost you there, Dick. that was like signing on to AOL 100 years ago. No good, huh? We lost them. Yeah. All right. What do you think, Case? Are we giving up? Yeah. No. I don't know. We got plenty to do. I got Tony and Rich and Steve yet, and I was also hoping for one other visit. So I think
I just got a great. Oh, he's back. All right, Casey says he's back. All right,
boy,
finish up, Dick. Before.
Exactly. Yes. Before Darth Vader interrupts again.
Exactly.
So race three, we like a first time starter, number 12, Winner Method. Watch the board on Saturday to see if it's live. I think it will be. And then we're going to move on to race number 8. And this is a turf race, class three, going 1,200 meters, the standard fare that you get over there. And I like number 8, Beauty Kobe. Ran pretty well in its lone Hong Kong start, but had 2 wins in Australia, down in Victoria, winning down there against Decent Company. So moves up a little bit in class, but this is a David Hayes production. Didn't run bad in its debut, going this distance, coursing distance on November 1st. Comes back, draws well with Zach, and I think Beauty Kobe race number eight. Can get the job done. So 2 picks, race 3, number 12, 8, number 8 at shot 10, early Sunday morning.
Excellent. All right. I'm not going to tempt fate, Dick. Although, give us very quickly your 220 synopsis, your final thoughts for the year.
Oh, boy. I'm not Jack Whitaker or Haywood Hailburn. I'm not an essayist as far as things like that. I think having racing, I don't know what 2020 would have been like if racing had been canceled all year. I don't know. I mean, just me personally, me professionally, me emotionally, that would have been disastrous. So the fact that we've had something that I do and have friends in, and you know, it's kind of the universe that I live in, thank God racing was able to get through it. Just a bit of that here, and there's going to be a tomorrow.
All right. That's fine. That says what needs to be said. Dick, best wishes, and you know, we hope that there's enough food in the freezer and pantry to hold you over at least, you know, 36 hours.
Don't worry about me.
Dick Powell, everybody, the HKJC Hong Kong Jockey Club and HKJC Racing on Twitter. We'll stay here. We've got Steve Haskin coming through. We're going to visit with Eric Hamelbeck. He was the surprise guest that I wanted to get in here to appreciate awesome again. And it was Eric that actually, even in advance of old friends, it was Eric who got the word out that Awesome Again had passed. And there were actually a couple of really – Eric's comments were really beautiful. And then his wife, too. Deb was shaken and saddened and wrote some things, too. So the Hamelbecks, who got to be – around him from the start. So we'll get some thoughts from Eric about Awesome Again. And he's also going to provide the update from the HBPA perspective. He's been sending out regular advisories regarding the status of the horse racing so-called Integrity Act. And there's some things happening that despite being promised debate and discussion, there's potential for it to be apparently tacked on to omnibus style legislation. So I'm going to get an update on that from Eric, as well as his Awesome Again thoughts. Right now, it'll be awesome to again welcome Steve Haskin.
Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. We're buried in snow, but so be it.
The original forecast said that, you know, upstate New York was not supposed to get it, and New York State got the worst of it, which is weird for a nor'easter. You know, basically, we were right on the fringe, right on the 95 corridor. We got about 5 inches or so. So obviously it wasn't that bad, but I hear like Tioga County in New York State got over 40 inches.
We've got 33.
33. Oh, well, that's, I mean, that is strange for a nor'easter to hit that far west. You would think that it would hit along the coast. And I know originally, like where my sister-in-law lives in Vermont, you know, it wasn't supposed to get up that high, and she got over 30 inches. So, and she's not, she's really only 2 hours from you. So, so I don't know. It was like a very weird storm that just getting pushed inward.
Yeah. Yeah, it just sort of, and then it for us, it parked. Which has happened a couple of times since I've lived. This is my 21st year living here, and there was one other that I specifically remember where it was the craziest thing we've ever seen. It snowed for 36 hours, and we got over 4 feet, and if you added, you know, the back to back element, it was even more than that. But this in one sitting, in really a short period of time, I mean, this was, I called it a thunderstorm style. The snow was coming down, Steve, so hard. I don't recall. I mean, we got 3 feet of snow essentially between 11 and 6 a.m. In 7 hours. Yeah, that's about right. That's about right.
You know, I mean, we got most of ours, you know, up until last night, and then it started tapering off. You know, we thought originally they said it was going to snow all through the night and into Thursday, but by this morning, it was, you know, it was pretty much stopped. And
nice.
You know, it's not bad out now. And so, Joan, like I said, we got away lucky with 5 inches. You know, I keep reading about all the, you know, the accidents out there, and you know, it's going to start to ice up. Now, what about you as far as, are you able to get out or
Well,
shovel or what?
No, Tina's I tuned up the snowblower yesterday after the show for Tina, and she knowing, you know, she wasn't going to have school.
Oh, you got a snowblower.
She's out there. She's out there right now, and much like she loves to mow the lawn, she loves to do the snow blowing, and when I do get a chance to use the snowblower, I apparently don't do it right. I don't go back and forth the right way. I don't go up the edge. I don't throw it in the right spot. We're much better off letting her do this.
Well, my better half is out there shoveling with her hands and no snowblower. So, but we don't.
Well,
we don't have three. Well, listen, I had a legitimate excuse. I told her, I said, honey, I got to do Steve Bick's show. I can't go out and shovel. She wouldn't let me anyway. Anyway, I was out earlier. I was out in the backyard. I was feeding the birds. So I had to dump a whole bunch of seed out there and clear a bunch of snow out in the back. So I did my part.
Let's also
no snowblower, just the two hands and a shovel.
Well, you don't exactly.
It's only 5 inches. Of course, the plow came by and.
Yeah, that's the biggest problem.
Work, so.
Well, your driveway is about maybe 2.5 car lengths long. You don't have a long driveway.
Yeah, well, it's not the driveway. It's going out onto the street where they pile up the snow that you got to clear it up.
That's true. Very annoying.
But, you know, there's a Facebook page which you wouldn't be able to relate to, but which I love. And it's a great Facebook page. She just walked in now. Her tongue is hanging out. And her face is all red. And she's staggering in her own words. So
I love it.
It's good to have a wife that likes to work manually. You know.
Yes.
You know us
very lucky.
Us old Jewish guys, by the way, you know, we can't do it, stuff like that. Like Tina said, you don't know how to use plow, and you know, I don't know how to do anything. So it's it's pretty much the same thing. I was saying that I posted, there's a Facebook page which I love.
Yeah,
it's called Bensonhurst Yesterday and Not Today.
Oh, fun.
And I mean, everything that's posted gets like 400 comments.
Sure.
And people say, oh, does anybody remember this, you know, this pizza place on, you know, and it's all about Bensonhurst where I grew up. And people post old photos. And so I post things about, you know, the Saturday matinees at the Marlboro Theater and, you know, the products that we had back then, you know, the Double Bubble versus Bazooka and Spalding versus Pensy Pinky and all kind of, well, you know, Bosco versus Ubet, all that kind of stuff. And I posted about my public school who went to PS 226. And everybody keeps pouring in. I mean, everybody was around there. And everybody came out. They had the same teacher as me. So anyway, so I posted yesterday. We're getting a snowstorm. And I posted, you know, does anybody remember these things? And I listed all the things growing up in Brooklyn. And the main thing is, if you ask me, literally, the happiest time of my childhood, it's having my mother on the phone at night, getting off the phone and saying those magical words, no school tomorrow. And next thing you know, an all-out frenzy breaks loose where I call up my friend Aaron, he'll call up Johnny, and he'll call up Joey, and he'll call up Junior, and he'll call up this. And okay, what time do you want to go out tomorrow? What time do you want to start building a fort? And what time do you want to start playing tackle football in the snow? And
yeah,
and every you got to coordinate the whole thing, and it's just like getting up in the morning and putting on those big black galoshes with the big snaps on there, and tucking your shirt, and you know, make sure you're trying to get those snaps, and they won't close. And I want to get out because everybody's out there, you know, built making snowballs already, and you know, starting to build a fort, and you know, it's just the greatest day, the greatest day of a childhood, you know, growing up in Brooklyn. And we used to build a fort on one side of the street, and then a bunch of kids would go across the street and build their fort. And we just hurl snowballs across the street, back and forth, and, you know, just having an all-out war. I mean, it was just great. We never even did, like, you know, sort of like middle America pansy-type things, like building snowmen. Yeah, I can't.
That comment's going to go over well.
Get snowball, and the first thing you had to do when you went out and to see is the snow is packing snow. I don't even know what they call it that. We call it packing snow, which is the wet snow where you can make snowballs. If it's the loose powdery stuff and it falls apart in your hand, it's like, oh God, the whole day's ruined. We can't do anything. We can't have snowball fights. We can't do this. You know, you just hate that loose powdery snow. But when it's packing snow and you get those big snowballs, you make them and then they turn rock hard in 2 seconds. You throw them at the lampposts and you throw them at each other. And I mean, one time my friend hit my mother right in the face with a snowball. We got into a bit of a fight over that. But it was great. It was great. And you know, back then, you know, we had no plows. You know, the snow was on the ground forever. And then, like, you wait, and then you have to wait. Then finally, when the big trucks came by, like, 3 or 4 days later, and they piled the snow up so high that we would play King of the Mountain, whereas one person would climb, and it's really high. I mean, I'm talking probably got to be 15 feet high or so, and somebody would climb to the top of it, and everybody would climb up the mountain trying to throw him off. And he would, like, throw everybody off and make, you know, try and use the, and if you threw somebody off, then you became King of the Mountain, and everybody would try and throw you off the mountain. And you were pretty high up there. So that was it. And then you just prayed. You just prayed. You just said, oh, I hope the snow doesn't go away. I hope it's horrible tomorrow. You know, then you start listening. Oh, I hope they close the school again tomorrow. And you're just waiting and waiting. And, you know, and then when the school's open, it's just, oh, God, just deflating. But that that moment, those words, no school tomorrow. God, I can still think of it now. I get orgasmic just thinking about it.
Well, we
that's how much I love school.
Well, we had, you know, with Tina. I mean, when she, I've said this a million times over the years. When they get the call that, you know, they get these robocalls, and you know, either a 2-hour delay or, you know, school has been canceled, and or, you know, we used to. I used to have to be the advance party. I would go look at the websites for the Albany Times Union or one of the TV channels, the CBS affiliate, always seemed to be the first that the school districts would call with cancellation. Now she gets these robocalls early in the morning. I mean, 4 o'clock sometimes. So it's not as, it used to be fun where I would be watching for the cancellation announcements, and she, you know, she was in a school district that would never be the first to cancel. They would need somebody else in the region to cancel first before Salem would cancel. And so, and she would always say this, you know, she said, who else has canceled? I said, Schuylerville just canceled. She goes, okay, we need Cambridge or Greenwich to cancel. And then Greenwich would cancel. She's okay. All right. We'll be all right. We're going to cancel. And she, so it's like dominoes. The dominoes would start to fall. And then, you know, then she, especially around this time of year, because, you know, the teachers get a chance, not that they're going to run out and go shopping today, but, you know, they can do some things around the house and wrap some presents or whatever it might be. That so the late December cancellation is a big winner. And when you talk about that website, it's funny. I wish my father is not dealing with the computer anymore, unfortunately. But I wish I'd known about this, Steve, earlier, because, you know, he grew up in Bensonhurst and Bay Ridge as well.
Oh, and he'd love this. I mean,
yeah, he would.
A lot of the people that comment, you know, well, they're, you know, a lot of old fogies like me. And, you know, do you remember, you know, famous restaurant on that was the name of the famous famous cafeteria on 86th Street? You remember this? And we, like I said,
sure.
We talk about all the things, and it's amazing. By the way, you say, you know, who went to PS226? Next thing you know, there's like 200 comments. Yeah,
oh,
I had
sure.
Mr. Glassman. I had Mrs. Aronson in third grade. Oh, I had her too. You know, I mean, it's just like all of a sudden, you know, this is like we're talking in the 1950s. Yeah, and it was just unbelievable. You know, then, you know, who went to Lafayette High School? Although I have no recollection of my high school years at all. Like I've always said, I do not remember one day of high school. It was like a blur. It never happened. It's like I never went to high school. I mean, I certainly didn't learn anything. So, I mean, it's just, I might as well have not gone. But
it was all
grammar school. You know, I had all my buddies. You know, we had a lot of kids on our block.
Sure.
You know, it was like half Jewish, half Italian, and, you know, half Catholic, I should say. But all the Catholics were Italian. But, I mean, we just had so many friends and just everybody just converging out onto the street. And, you know, like I said, if you knew somebody was out there, and there was always one stupid buckle on those galoshes that wouldn't snap, you know, you said, oh, heck with it. Your mother said, no, you got to buckle all of those things. And, you know, you got to pull the things over and try and snap those buckles on those big black galoshes and stuff. And, you know, it was great. And then you'd come in, you're soaking wet, your gloves are wet, your socks are wet. And it was like, who cares?
That's, I mean, true.
It was
true.
Pure heaven.
That's true. That's a universal childhood appeal, no doubt.
I'm sure.
No doubt.
You know, but like I said, we were very aggressive. We, I mean, we didn't do the snowman thing. It was just go out there and just all hell broke loose out there.
Steve, a couple of things. I got last week we ended up postponing a show, and you said, well, it's quiet anyway. But I said to you that I would have asked you about Congaree, who we talked about. Then yesterday, the news of Awesome again. You know, I had John Adger join us about Congaree. And, you know, there's a horse that really, when people talk about the, you know, these first two decades of racing this century, he doesn't seem to get enough appreciation, and as much as he should.
Well, you know, the amazing thing is that to me, Congaree and Awesome Again had very, very similar careers. Both horses were incredibly underrated, number one. Number two, as three-year-olds, both of them played second fiddle in their own barn.
That's right.
Congaree played second fiddle to Point Given, and Awesome Again played second fiddle to Touch Gold. And both those horses, Point Given and Touch Gold, both had their three-year-old King and Pink cut short, although Touchgold should have. They brought him back later in the year, and he wasn't right. His hoof was like half gone. I mean, they just butchered that horse at the end of the year. But, you know, Point Given retired after the Travers. But both those horses, you know, lived in the shadow. Because I remember when, you know, Touch Gold was the big horse. And he, you know, should have won the Belmont. He should have won the Preakness, won the Belmont, won the Haskell. And then Awesome Again came along and won the Queen's Plate. And then came up to Saratoga, won the Jim Dandy. And I remember being at the Saratoga sales. And I asked Frank Stronach, I said, are you going to run Touch Gold and Awesome Again against each other? He says, I don't know. He says, we have to think about it. And I kept trying to persuade him not to, because I didn't want Awesome Again to beat Touch Gold, because I, you know, I was a huge Touch Gold fan from the time he was a baby. And as it turns out, Touch Gold had, you know, got messed up again and didn't make the Travers, and Awesome Again wound up running in it and ran third. And the thing with Congaree is that after Point Given left and, you know, got, was retired with an injury, people don't realize what Congaree. Congaree went back-to-back Cigar Miles. I mean, that is hard to do, to win back-to-back Cigar Miles. And he wins the Hollywood Gold Cup. He won the Carter Handicap. Trying to think. He got beat a nose in the Sanita Handicap. I mean, he was a really, really good horse. And people just never really gave him the recognition. All they kept thinking about, because 2001, all they kept talking about was Point Given. And then comes 2002, when he has a big year, Baffert's got War Emblem. You know, so it was just crazy. I mean, it was really a shame, because I mean, Congaree was such a brilliant horse. I mean, I remember I was there, you know, I covered the Wood Memorial that he won, and I think it was like his third or fourth start of his life or so. I mean, he was just a very inexperienced horse. And he beat Monarcos. And one of the reasons why Monarcos went on to win the Derby was that they were given instructions. Chavez was given instructions that day, you know, not to go after Congaree. Don't kill Monarcos. You know, just if you run second, fine. It was a prep. You know, nobody has preps anymore. Everybody's got to win every prep. But, you know, it was just John Ward said, you know, it's a prep race. Don't kill him to go after Congaree. And Congaree went out there and won off by like three lengths or so. And, you know, Monarcos ran a good second, came back and won the Derby. And, again, it was a shame because Congaree got killed on that ridiculously suicidal pace. You know, it was the fastest pace in Derby history. And he was right. He was right on the pace. And one of the reasons why Point Given ran so poorly is that Baffert really regretted giving Gary Stevens instructions, because he was afraid of Congaree. And he told him, he says, don't let Congaree get too far ahead of you. So by doing that, Point Given was too close to the pace. And even though he wasn't nearly as close to the pace as Congaree, he stayed close enough where, you know, that pace killed him. And that's when afterwards the Prince personally told Gary Stevens, I want you at the back of the pack in the Preakness. I don't even want you anywhere near the pace. And, of course, we saw what happened in the Preakness and the Belmont. But, I mean, Congaree ran a sensational race. Another great race that he lost. He wasn't even in the money in the Breeders' Cup Classic. He went head-in-head every step of the way with Medaglia d'Oro. I mean, they went literally. It was like a Rydan Jiper Travers. I mean, they went nose and nose, head and head, every step of the way, and they were right there at the 16th pole, and then finally, Pleasantly Perfect came and ran by him, and Congaree finished fourth. He got beat like two lengths or so, but he ran a terrific race. You're going head with a horse like Medaglia d'Oro. So I mean, even in his losses, when he got beat a nose by Milwaukee Brew in the Sandy the Handicap. Brilliant, brilliant horse. And the thing with Awesome Again is that, again, after Touch Gold, you know, departed, you know, the following year, they turned the horses over to Pat Byrne. And the first start out, they brought Touch Gold back, and he came within a fifth of a second of the track record at Churchill Downs, going a mile allowance race. And Pat Byrne, you know, was saying that, you know, Touch Gold is a you know, better horse than Awesome Again. But Touch Gold, again, you know, he wound up coming down with EPM. After all the problems he had with his foot, came down with EPM. It was really never the same horse. And he had all kinds of neurological problems. And Austin McGann went on and have a tremendous campaign. And he beat probably the best Breeders' Cup Classic field ever assembled. Everybody keeps thinking of Swain ducking out and Silver Charm, you know, ducking out, coming out into the middle of the track. But it's funny. I was watching the race, you know, up covering it for the Racing Form, and I was up in the Racing Form area of the press box, and I was listening to the chart caller, the Racing Form chart caller, call the race. And he's calling, you know, so-and-so by the head, blah, 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 blah. And then he comes to the finish line, and he says, all right, Touch Gold wins it, and Silver Charm second. I go, huh? What are you talking about? I mean, he didn't even get the call right from the Racing Form chart caller. But, you know, it's just unfortunate because he won so many big, and he won all over the place. He won the Hawthorne Gold Cup, he won at Saratoga, he won the Saratoga Cup, and you know, he was a very, very good horse. And then comes to the sales, and as little respect as he got as a racehorse, he got even less respect at the sales. Because, again, I was at the sales every year, and I don't forget the first crop, maybe the first two crops of Austin McGann. He couldn't get a bid. I mean, you know, they always open up. He says, all right, do I have 50,000? All right, do I have a 10,000, 15? I mean, every one of his yearlings was selling for 20,000, 25,000. I'm saying, Why is everybody completely ignoring this horse? And nobody, I guess because he had no speed, and they looked at him as he was kind of sort of a plotter type or so. I don't know what they were looking at, but that's breeders for you. And they wouldn't buy him. I mean, every one of his horses was selling dirt cheap, so he got no respect at the sales. And then, boom, out of the clear blue sky, boom, here comes Ghost Zapper, and this horse, and that stakes winner, and that stakes, one stakes winner after another. And he became, and for like 3 or 4 years, he became a huge, huge sire. I mean, he sired a lot of top horses. So, and ironically, Touch Gold's first crop was brilliant. They were winning everything, and that just tailed off. And Touch Gold never really duplicated his first crop. But Austin McGann, on the other hand, just got better as he stood at stud. So
that's true.
Yeah. So both those horses. Both those horses, he really got lost in the shadow of stablemates. But, you know, the thing with Austin McGann, I have to say, is that you have to wonder sometime when you start moving around a 26-year-old horse, and, you know, it's nobody's fault, certainly not old friend's fault or anything, but, you know, he's 26 years old and you move him and he dies 2 months later, you know, whether it has any bearing on it at all, I have no idea. But I've seen it happen before.
Sure.
I remember when it happened with Kelso. You know, Kelso was an old horse. They decided to parade him for the Jockey Club Gold Cup. And he was, 25, 26 or something like that. And, you know, they put him on a van at that age. He had been at the farm for so long. You know, he was an old horse already. And they put him on a van to parade him. You know, John Henry was running. They brought Forgo in. Forgo was obviously much younger, and John Henry was in the Gold Cup, and they brought him there, and he paraded, and they brought him back to the farm. Next day, he died. You know, and I saw it with Ali Sheba. Ali Sheba, they brought him from Saudi Arabia to the horse park. He was 24 years old. Everybody's, oh, wow, Ellie Sheba's back. Everybody was thrilled to death. He was 24 years old. Next year, he's dead. I don't know if there's any parallels between those. But, you know, there is something about when you start moving, old horses around. And just too coincidental sometimes. It's happened to a lot of horses. I can see bringing horses to old friends when they're 17, 18, 19. 20, 21, even, you know, give them another 8, 9, 10 good years. But when they start getting up around 25, 26, 27, I don't know if these horses should be moved.
Well, I can tell you that from conversations with Dr. Alday, and we've touched on not using that as the impetus, but in conversation with Dr. Alday, one contributing factor is their digestive system, because the the mobility of their intestine, it starts to thicken and doesn't, it's not as active. And so when you stress a horse of that age, you're dealing with a roll of the dice on their digestive track right away. And because, you know, they're already dealing with a boiler that is not well designed. So that thickening of the intestines and the fact that it doesn't move things along like it does in a young horse. And even in young horses, you end up with horses, you know, colicking and tying up because of stress. So when you do it with an elderly horse, you're really, you better have the right temperament. I guarantee you, if there's people with veterinary experience, they're saying, you know, the dopey guy on the radio is right about that.
Well, you know, when I wrote the Kelso book, you know, one of the guys who helped a lot there was this guy, Dick Jenkins, who was as close to Kelso. He was there when Kelso was born, and he was there when Kelso died. I mean, he was as close to Kelso as anybody, more so even than owner, trainer. He was there with him almost every day of his life. And when they brought Kelso to Belmont Park, you know, he went and he looked at him, you know, in the paddock, and he said he did not like the way he looked. He looked stressed, and he was sweating, and he just did not like that at all. I mean, because it is stressful, you know, put a horse on a van and send him and bring him in front of all those big crowds at Belmont Park in the paddock, you know, and everybody surrounding him. You know, it's very stressful on these old horses. So, you know, but the thing with Awesome Again, I mean, he 2 months later, you know, and he died.
We're going to have Eric Hamelbeck. Eric's going to talk about him. And Eric, it's one of his favorites. In fact, you know, I'm just thinking, we had the conversation with Helen Pitts. We lost Einstein too in the last 90 days.
Yeah, he wasn't their old friends long either. You know, he wasn't quite as old, but still, you never know. Then you look at a horse like Tapizar, you know, who was ready to go to Japan, and you know, he dies in a stall accident. It wasn't even his stall. He was in a quarantine barn. So I don't know. You know, he's in a new barn that he had never been in before. I don't know what I can't imagine what he did. Obviously, I mean, I have no idea what he did in the stall. I don't know if he kicked something or broke something or I have no idea. But you know, it was a strange stall. It was a quarantine barn that he was in, getting ready to go to Japan. So you got to be really careful with these horses, you know, when you start moving them around. And, you know, we have a lot of horses now that we send overseas and ship these horses all over the place. And
well, I've had on that topic, there's no doubt that this, you know, the whole shuttle stallion nonsense of sending these horses back and forth, you know, every 5 to 7 months, it, to me, is just an invitation. I have talked to all day about, and he completely feels that it's an invitation for problems. And you know, we lost Summerbird that way. You lost you lost Scat Daddy that way. I mean, there's enough. That's the tip of the iceberg. There's been so many others. You know, the whether it's Southern Hemisphere or whatever. International, ferrying.
I mean, I hate all that shoveling. Yeah. And once in a blue moon, you get a horse like More Than Ready, you know, dead for several years, and you know, he's fine. You know, he got better as he went to stud, but that's an anomaly. I mean, that doesn't normally happen. But these horses aren't geared to breed to 300 mares and breed all year. You know what I mean? Like every living creature, you know, got to give him a break. You can't have him breed to 200 mares in Kentucky and then ship them to Australia and have him breed to another 200, 250 mares. I mean,
correct.
It's just nonstop. I mean, listen, I mean, you know, when you breed a mare, it's not like going out in a paddock and having a, you know, just running around a paddock or so.
No.
There's stress involved.
Big time.
You get up there and mount the mare.
Yep. And well, there's dangers
from personal experience, but
there's dangerous. Well, there's dangers in the actual, just in the interaction. And then, sure. Then you get it. I mean, look at who was it? Bridgetown, right? Bridgetown got kicked by a mayor.
Yeah.
And ended up killing him. I mean, it's also a violent. I mean, for those that have seen it, I mean, it's not something romantic or pleasant.
Oh God,
way,
you
know.
No, did you ever see what a mare looks like when she's being bred?
Yeah, it's a mess.
They got a twitch in her mouth.
Yeah.
So she can't move. Her whole snout is being twisted around. She got this. A blanket on her that weighs about 90 pounds
right.
for the stallion to get her up and grab hold of and chew onto if he has to. I mean, yeah, she's got one leg that's being held up, that's tied,
that's right.
so she can't
that's
get
right.
back.
Yep.
You know, so you got to hold her front leg up. I mean, you look at it and you say, this is not romantic.
It's amazing, actually.
It's a factory.
Well, exactly, and you know, three times a day at the height of the season, it's amazing. Actually, there aren't more incidents and more injuries and problems. Actually, and I know everybody. You know, they've got them all. You know, they've got them all outfitted. If it's done right, everybody's got you know pads on, and you know, there's lots of protective gear to minimize you know those. Potential for issues, but it's funny that this came up. I know for a fact. I think when Bridgetown died, we addressed this, and Dr. Alday, you know, talked about the precautions, the dangers, the you know all the difficulties. Steve, I've still got quite a bit to do yet. I've got Tony to get in, and Rich Eng, and Eric Hallenbeck.
Hey, well, let me stop you.
No, this was great. But your final thoughts on 20 and wishes for the listeners and for the game at large.
My final thoughts on 20, I'm glad it's over.
Yeah.
you know, I mean, listen, depends on how you're looking at it. If you're looking at it from a racing standpoint, you're looking at it from a social standpoint. But, you know, obviously it was a tough – listen, personally speaking, it wasn't that different for me because I don't do anything anyway. You know, I stay in the house, and every 2 weeks we go to Connecticut. So that was basically, you know, still the way it was. So, but I tell you, I feel bad for all the small shop owners, the restaurant
sure.
owners,
yep.
all these businesses that,
yep.
you know, I mean, in the summertime, they could sort of get away with it a little bit to have outdoor dining, but you can't have that now. And plus it's taking off again. But even if it wasn't, you know, who's going to have outdoor dining in December and January? So, you know, all these shop owners, restaurant owners that spend years and years to build up a business and just to have to sit back and be so helpless and to see their businesses go under, you know, it's really sad. I mean, everybody's suffering from it. You know, from a racing standpoint, hey, listen, you know, we should be thankful we got racing in. You know, to me, you know, listen, I hate to say, I don't want to sound cynical, but to me, there was no Triple Crown this year. I mean, to me, the Belmont never happened. I mean, it was the Peter Pan with Tis the Law. And the way I look at it, and again, it's just my opinion, but there's no way Authentic wins the Derby on the first Saturday in May, and there's no way Tis the Law loses the Derby on the first Saturday in May. And there's no way Swiss Skydiver even runs in the Preakness if it was run in May. So, you know, to me, the whole Triple Crown was sort of messed up. The, you know, the Classic to me was anticlimactic. I thought it was going to be a good race. And, you know, again, you know, then he goes out there and steals the race and the other jockeys fall asleep. And, you know, listen, it's nitpicking. I know racing did what it had to do. You know, I think Churchill Downs made a mistake by switching the date of the Derby. I think they would have had a much better race on the first Saturday in May. And they as it turns out, they really didn't have to, and they made, you know, Belmont and the Preakness have to move and go into, you know, crazy places. But the thing is, you know, we had racing; that was the important thing. You know, fans
right.
or no fans,
right?
We had a great Saratoga meet, and the one thing about racing, like I said, you keep the camera in the grandstand and you look out on the track. It's not like watching football when you're seeing these guys play football with an empty stadium. You know, racing, if you don't look at the grandstand, You don't know the difference. You know, you just see racing as it is, and Saratoga was great. And we, you know, we did have some great racing, and but, you know, it is what it is. I mean, you just get through it and hope we go back to normalcy next year. At least Churchill Downs already said that they're, you know, going back to the first Saturday in May, thank goodness. So at least we'll have a normal derby.
Well, Steve, as always, thanks for a wonderful year of coverage and insights and fun and have all the conversations and best wishes to Joan and to the kids and the baby. Yeah. And
best to your family too. Have a great holiday. And my last words to you, Steve, is that I'm glad to see that Hertz has put you back in the driver's seat.
Well, we'll see about that. It was at least fun to, you know, it was a fun 3 hours to listen to.
Talk about a spark. Woo.
Yeah, yeah. No, he's a spark.
Totally different.
It's amazing.
Team out there.
It's amazing how that happens in sports. And we see it in our game, too. Steve Haskin, everybody. Secretariat.com for Steve's insights. And you can also find him with the Ultacacas and at Bensonhurst now and forever.
Yeah. Stop over. Say hi.
We'll take a break. Last of the morning. It's been a fun day already, and we got about 40 minutes left. I've got Eric Hamelbeck joining us next. Tony Black, we got to get to, and Rich Eng. And in fact, for Rich, one of his boys, our man Lou Filoso, the other day won the Monmouth the contest at Monmouth over the weekend, and. Gives him his eighth NHC qualification. So congratulations, Lou. There's a lot of familiar names, actually, over the weekend. Steve DeCaspers on Sunday qualified. Phil Lamb. He got his ninth NHC qualifier. And how about Judy Wagner, by the way? Judy, in very short order, we talked to Judy earlier in the summer. She got both of her seats. She got a second ticket. I see Jim Metzger in Louisville. It's a name I know. Andrew Osborne, second NHC. Metzger is fourth. Bob Masterson, third NHC. I'll get through all of these. Who else? Anybody else we know offhand? Top of the... Paul Scott, Plantation, Florida. Jeff Joffrian in Baton Rouge. His fourth, sixth for Paul Scott. Steve Abelman in D.C., his third NHC seat. Carolyn Stovall, her third appearance. She's dual qualified. Jim Morgan, dual qualified. Second time. He actually cashed a check back in February. Keith Nodskov, Bel Air, Texas. That'll be his first NHC. DeCaspers, I mentioned, fifth. Artis Rogue, Cornville, Arizona, eighth time. And Robert Childress in Austin, Travis Allison in Frisco, Texas, fourth and first time qualifiers, respectively. There you go. That was last week's qualifiers. Back after this, Eric Hamelbeck.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
From BRL Equine, the people that bring you EPO Equine, Unlock and Bleeder Shield, now comes Flexify HA, the most advanced scientifically based joint supplement on the market. To find out more, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880. To be the best, give them only the best. BRL Equine.
We'll be right back.
The exciting Southern California Thoroughbred Daytime Racing Circuit continues with the L.A. County Fair meet at Los Alamitos Racecourse. The meet is off to a great start with strong fields throughout, and the stakes action continues at the Orange County Track, headed by the Los Alamitos Futurity on Saturday, December 19th. The Futurity has seen some tremendous winners in years past, like Standouts McKenzie in 2017, Improbable in 2018, and Thousand Words in 2019. Watch and wager on all the great racing action on TVG, plus all other major ADW providers at an open satellite locations. On weekdays, our first post will be 1 p.m., while weekends will feature a 12:30 p.m. first post time. Plus, our wagering menu includes a pair of $1 pick fours, a traditional $2 pick six, and the popular 14% players pick five. And as we continue to follow our local guidelines, we'd like to thank all the great racing fans across the nation for their continued support of Los Alamitos Racecourse. Watch and wager on exciting Southern California thoroughbred racing. The L.A. County Fair Meet at Los Alamitos continues through Sunday, December 20th. For more, visit losalamitos.com.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years.